You're listening to Sipping on Some Crime podcast, hosted by Aaron. This podcast covers sensitive and triggering subjects, explicit language, and mature content which may not be suitable for children. As always, all parties are innocent until proven guilty.
Today, I will be covering the case of Debani Escobar. Debani's case not only captured an entire country, but it's captured the world's attention. It shines a light on the dangers of being a woman in many countries and the lack of investigative resources to solve those crimes. A lot of times, we like to think about the impact of these cases in our own backyard. But as we've learned and continue to learn, what's going on in the world but true crime matters. Those cases have a global impact on how we look at how these cases should be handled and prosecuted. And a lot of them carry the same stigmas, surprisingly, across all borders. This case is out of Mexico, and it caught my attention a few months ago. I've been researching it and working my best to translate articles into English and understand all of the facts and dynamics in this case. I'm struggling to find a lot of information about Debani as a person, like how she grew up and the things she liked to do. So that's going to be a little different than my normal format, because we're going to start with the day that Debani disappeared. It was April 8th, 2022. Debani, 18 years old and an only child, would go out to a party with her friends Sarai and Yvonne. Sarai and Debani had only been friends at this time for around 4 months, and they had begun attending parties together back in March of 2022. Prior to April 8th, 2022, Sarai and Debani had only attended around 4 or 5 parties together. Yvonne was Sarai's co-worker, and on the night of April 8th, that would be the first time that she met Debani. We have stories from partygoers, theories from investigators, as well as theories from Debani's parents about what happened on the night of April 8th. What we're going to try to do is focus solely on what we know as fact. What we do know is the girls attended a few parties that night. Witness reports from these parties stated that it was clear that the girls were under some sort of influence, whether it was alcohol, drugs, or both, we honestly don't know. Around 11 p.m. April 8th, Debani would leave her home located in Amerada. All three girls would leave from this area using an app called DD, which is similar to our Uber apps, where you request a ride from your location and a driver in that area will be connected to you via the app. The girls would have the driver take them to Simone Boulevard in the center of San Nicolas. Before heading to their first party, the girls would decide to stop at a convenience store. There is a video surveillance of Debani, Yvonne, and Sarai at this convenience store. Debani is wearing a white, almost crop top tank top, and black pants that look like a long skirt. She is also wearing a black mask. In this footage, which I will post links to and put up on social and my website, you can see Debani walks in first ahead of the other two girls and heads straight to the counter and buys a bottle of Sky Vodka. From the convenience store, all three girls would head to the party where they would hang out with friends and play drinking games until more of their friends arrived. Once those friends arrived, they would decide to all leave together to another party. This second party was within walking distance from the first party. Once Debani, Sarai, and Yvonne, and now a few more friends, arrive to this party that is within walking distance, nobody is there. The party was over or had moved, we don't exactly know. As a group, they decide to head to another party. The party they decide to go to is not within walking distance, so again, they decide to use the DD app to find a ride. At 12:49 a.m. Saturday, April 9th, Juan David, their driver, would arrive to pick up the group and take them to their next location. The group would load up in Juan's 2018 white Kia Rio, and he drives them approximately 4 miles to a country house in Escobedo. When they arrive, Sarai and Yvonne tell Debani, unfortunately, the party is already over now and they're on the search for another party. Juan hasn't left yet and he's kind of hanging back to see if the girls are going to need another ride. They decide that they're going to head to another party located in La Quinta El Demonte. Juan drops them off at 1:20 a.m. There is surveillance footage showing Juan dropping the girls off and them exiting his vehicle. In the video, you see Debani getting out of the left side of the vehicle. When Juan's vehicle pulls away, you can see the girls join a group of around 4 boys. In this surveillance video, you can see Debani and one of the girls is hanging back behind the group, following them. From both surveillance videos that we've seen so far, Debani and the other girls, Yvonne and Sarai, do not look intoxicated at this point. They're able to walk and hold themselves up, and there's no obvious signs of intoxication. You will see them all head off the camera towards the entrance of what we understand now was a private party. A private party that the girls didn't even know anybody at, but somehow they talked their way into this party. Around 1:30 a.m., all 3 girls are now inside this private house party. Approximately 10 minutes later, footage from the same spot that Juan dropped all 3 girls off at, we see Debani walking by herself at a very fast pace away from the party, in the direction that they originally came from. She's walking completely by herself as far as anyone can tell in this frame. Now at the top of the left-hand side of the frame is a large RV that covers most of the sidewalk. So you see her come from behind that RV and continue down the sidewalk, and that's where you really start to see her in the footage. Some people think that she might be talking to someone at the end of the sidewalk off camera that you can't see, that she might be trying to get someone's attention, but without sound, it's hard to tell if she's trying to say anything or if she's trying to talk to someone. There is, at this point, no one in frame with her. The moment you see her go out of frame, maybe 2 seconds later, a group of boys come into frame from the opposite direction, which means they would have passed each other off camera as Debani was going the other way. Just a few moments later, we do see Debani walking again quite fast back towards the party. She just left, passing the boys that are still standing in the parking lot. That same surveillance camera will capture Debani again at 2:45 a.m., but this time, she is coming from the opposite direction of the party. I believe it's safe to assume that there's 2 entrances or exits in and out of this party because she's not seen on camera again until 2:45 a.m. It's at this point that she comes running onto the screen. Behind her is a man that looks like he's in a white t-shirt and jeans, and he is running behind her very fast. This man catches up to Debani and he reaches out to grab her. After he's gotten close enough to grab Debani, she pulls away to the left side, getting out of his grip. She runs off to the sidewalk that's on the right side of the screen, pushing him away. But he catches up to her again and tries to reach out to her as she's pushing him away, and he continues to head towards her. At this point, Debani's completely alone. There's no friends, and she's on the sidewalk with this man when a red car passes by. It looks like Debani tries to go back towards the party and he prevents her from going up the sidewalk. She tries to dart past him and again he blocks her, so she turns to go towards the exit and he's again coming towards her and she kicks him away. At this point, it looks like a guy and a girl walk up as Debani and this unknown man are standing on the sidewalk and Debani is hitting him and pushing him to get away from her. The woman and the man that are approaching this unknown male and Debani seem to walk in between Debani and this unknown man and start talking, when suddenly a larger group comes around and sees the commotion. This group starts to head up the sidewalk and all of a sudden Debani disappears into this group of people surrounding her. Some people from the group break off and start to head towards the exit, but Debani gets lost in the crowd that's surrounding her on the sidewalk against a wall. You can't even see her anymore. She just fades into the group. A little less than 30 minutes later, at 3:29 a.m., Yvonne sends a text to Juan, their driver, saying, "Hi." He will head their way. She didn't use the DD app to do this. She used her personal one-on-one text message. During the investigation, we later find out that Yvonne had asked Juan, when he first brought them to the party, if she could get his number through the WhatsApp. That way, they could message one another and she could guarantee to have him pick them up again instead of getting whoever the app offered in the area at the time. This is highly dangerous and very risky because the app monitors who's picking you up, what time they arrived, and where they took you. Trying to save money this way by using personal text messages with a driver and not filtering it through the app, there's no protection for you if something happens. At 3:36 a.m., Juan responds to Yvonne and says, "Come pick us up," and drops a pen location of where they're at. A minute later, Juan texts Yvonne to make sure that no one will vomit in his car. Yvonne responds no and asks Juan where he's at this point, and he sends a message saying that he's 5 minutes away, and Yvonne says thank you. Yvonne then sends Juan a 2-second clip showing where they're standing so it's easier for him to find them. Yvonne then sends another message asking if it's okay if only Debani gets in the car and asks him to take her back to her house because she's drunk. Yvonne then texts Juan Debani's home address, and Juan texts back that he is still a few minutes away. At 3:54 a.m., Juan texts Yvonne that he has arrived. From another angle of another surveillance camera footage facing the direction of the first surveillance footage, we get to see a different view. This angle is from the corner of the sidewalk that's facing across the opposite side of the street. This is where we will see Juan's car pull up. Juan comes to a stop in front of the sidewalk where the group was, and we see Debani run across the street, open his back door, get in the back seat, and slam the door shut. Behind Debani is another girl that's running up behind her, and this girl goes directly to Juan's driver's side window. The next time we see Debani on surveillance camera, she is in Juan's car, but now she's in the front seat of Juan's car. The car is parked on the side of the street somewhere, and it's zoomed in really close, so it's hard to tell if they're in a neighborhood or a business district. But it does look like they're having some kind of conversation. Based on what I've read about this clip, it seems like they're not far from where they first left. Again, I'm going to try my best to break down as much as I can here, but there is a bit of a language barrier, so some things could get lost in translation. But I'm going to do my best to stick to the facts and describe the scene for you as I see it. But I also encourage you to watch these surveillance footage videos and make up your own mind. Some people believe that Juan and Debani are in a heated discussion because of the way she is moving her hands, that perhaps they are in some kind of argument. But again, that just leads to speculation. I will put up the video so that you can view it for yourself. That's the last surveillance footage of Debani and Juan in the car, and we know from there, Debani never makes it home. April 9th, when Debani's parents wake up and she's not there, they begin to worry. They reach out to Debani's friends, and that's when they find out that she was at a party last night with friends when she became too intoxicated and that friends put her in a cab and sent her home, and they hadn't seen or heard from her since. Debani's parents would right away call the police and report their daughter missing. That same day, Yvonne would send Debani's parents a photo of Debani that she said Juan had sent her. It was a photo of Debani standing with her arms crossed in the median in the middle of a busy highway looking off into the distance. It would be this eerie photo that would get spread through social media so quickly throughout Mexico and beyond. People were sharing this picture in hopes to find Debani and bring her home. It got shared through so many social media sites, and with Debani herself being tagged in it through her Instagram when her Instagram was still up, which it no longer is, it was able to allow people to connect to her. It wasn't just that this photo was shared, but it being linked to her Instagram and the fact that we are in this digital age where Debani had TikTok and Instagram and these social media sites that we use daily, that photo being tagged back to her so many times, people were actually able to get a glimpse into Debani's life. Suddenly, it wasn't just a missing person to a lot of people after watching her TikToks or her Instagram, because a lot of young girls could see themselves in Daybani. Because like many young teenage girls, she had lots of dreams to travel and meet new people and see new things. This allowed so many people to be able to connect to her and create this more genuine connection. Daybani is extremely beautiful, and this image, along with them being able to look through her life, brought her case more attention in this area. 41 other girls since the beginning of 2022 have gone missing from that same area, and these girls and their cases are just not receiving the attention they deserve. People being able to feel so connected to Daybani would in turn bring attention to these other women's cases. So what happened after Juan picked up Daybani, and why didn't she make it home? And why had Juan sent this eerie picture of Daybani to Yvonne? If we go back and look at the text messages between Yvonne and Juan after he picks her up, Juan tells Yvonne that he can't take Daybani, that he doesn't want any problems. Yvonne would text back explaining that she just can't stay and to please take Daybani home. Juan then texts Yvonne asking for Daybani's mother's phone number. Yvonne tells Juan that she doesn't have Daybani's mother's phone number and the other girl she's with doesn't either. The next text that Juan sends Yvonne is a picture. It looks like it's taken from the inside of the car facing through the windshield, and you can see Daybani. It's a little blurry, but you can see her, and it looks like she's standing in the middle of a lane on the roadway, and this photo is stamped 4:25 a.m. Juan then sends a voice message to Yvonne stating that Daybani has gotten out of his car and doesn't want to leave. And that's when he sends Yvonne that picture of Daybani standing now on the intersection in the middle of this highway, and that's the photo that goes viral. After Juan sends this picture at 4:26 a.m. of Daybani standing on that median, he also sends a voice message to Yvonne saying that Daybani had gotten aggressive and she didn't want to go with him. He asked Daybani for her mother's number so he could get her some help, and she didn't want to give it to him. That's when he said she began slapping him and getting aggressive with him when he got out of the vehicle. He came to Yvonne that he cannot force her back into the car, and Yvonne replies, "Please, I don't know what else to do." At this point, Yvonne calls Juan, but Juan doesn't answer. Juan sends Yvonne a message saying that he dropped Daybani back off where he picked her up. Yvonne messages back and asks, was it at La Quinta El Demonte? Juan then sends a voice message to Yvonne saying that now he does not know where Daybani is. Juan goes on to explain that he left Daybani where he last took that picture of her because he could not force her to get into the vehicle. He tried to get her in, but she just wouldn't get in the vehicle, so he left. He said that at one point he saw a patrol car drive by while she was standing out there, and he knew if he grabbed her and forced her in the car, he could be accused of kidnapping. Juan asks why Daybani had to leave the party and why they couldn't take care of her. To which Yvonne responds that at that point, Daybani was so intoxicated that she was hitting and fighting with everyone and even bit one of their friends in the group. And that's why they called him to take her home, because she was just so unbearable and unable to be controlled. Juan goes on to ask Yvonne if Daybani had some kind of drug because he can't help her or get any control of her. He says she's been yelling at him, fighting with him, and even threw her phone at him. Daybani told him that her father was a lawyer, and at this point, Daybani was acting so erratic that Juan says he could not control her. On that Daybani is not on any drugs, but she did drink a lot of vodka. Juan again asks Yvonne if she can get in touch with Daybani's mom or anyone she knows to let them know what's going on. Yvonne does say eventually that they were able to get Daybani's mother's number and they called, but nobody answered. Juan said he tried to convince Daybani to call her mother herself, but she refused to. 4:36 a.m. is the last message Juan sends to Yvonne that morning. He says he left Daybani where she was because she refused to get in the car. Juan would later reach out again to Yvonne and say, "You know, I'm worried about her. I don't want this on my conscience. I couldn't help her, and someone needs to help her. Please let me know how this ends up." It would be 2:54 p.m. that following afternoon that Yvonne would receive a text from Yvonne checking in asking what happened with Daybani. Yvonne wouldn't respond until 5:49 p.m. letting Yvonne know that they hadn't been able to find Daybani and that they were searching for her. Mario Daybani's father, who since reporting his daughter missing was working closely with the police in their search to find his daughter, would see a video of Daybani and Yvonne parked in his car that would be released, and Mario would tell reporters what he believed that footage showed. April 11th, Mario would hold a press conference and he would say, quote, "The moment where the taxi driver Yvonne David reaches out to my daughter's breasts, and from here I guess that my daughter cannot stand the harassment. The prosecutor says there is no crime to pursue and I am upset with the prosecutor. And there are many people who witnessed, many witnesses. I publicly accuse Yvonne David Sellar," unquote. Mario believes that this is why Daybani chose to get out of the vehicle. Not that she got out on her own, not that she was upset. That it was these events that caused her to remove herself from the vehicle because she didn't want to be harassed. I watched the video over and over again, and honestly, I think the images aren't clear enough to really say what happened in that front seat. I struggle to make out the exact hand movements and gestures. You can tell that they are talking and there's some kind of conversation going on and they are definitely moving their hands a lot, but what exactly is happening is too hard to tell. Investigators did get involved right away, supplying search and rescue dogs. There were search teams established by police that were searching for Daybani and any signs of where she went, as well as local search groups. They didn't just search where she had vanished from, but they retraced Daybani's steps that night and searched every area she had visited. So each party she had gone to, the gas station, any stops that they knew that Daybani had made, they searched those areas. The local search groups also held up banners and flyers with Daybani's name and face on the side of the roadways, asking drivers and passerbyers if they had seen Daybani. Reward for the amount of 100 million pesos was offered for information in the disappearance of Daybani, which would be close to around $5,000 in U.S. currency. At first, Yvonne had not made himself available for questioning. From what I understand, I don't know much about the legal system in Mexico and what it means that he made himself unavailable for questioning. However, when Daybani's father's accusations started to affect his reputation and his daily life, Yvonne did come forward and speak with investigators. Yvonne would willingly hand over his phone to investigators, and investigators were now able to see all the text messages not from just Yvonne's side, but from both sides that were sent that night. The reason that Daybani was in the front seat of the car. Yvonne says it's because Daybani needed to charge her phone. He says at this point it was very clear that an intoxicated Daybani was trying to convince him to just leave her there. He said she wanted to stay where she was and didn't want to go home. Yvonne states that he was trying his best to keep her in the car, calm her down so that he could get her home safely because to him she appeared very intoxicated. He wasn't sure if it was just alcohol. Yvonne told investigators he felt since her friends had ditched her and she was all alone, he was responsible to make sure that she got home safely even though they were strangers to one another. Yvonne states that this is when Daybani became very aggressive with him. A lot of people go back and point to the first video where you can see a guy chasing after Daybani in the parking lot and her hitting him and kicking him, saying that could point to her being an aggressively intoxicated person. However, we don't know why she was being aggressive with this person in the parking lot, so I don't feel like that's an assumption we can just blindly make. At this point, investigators have seen Yvonne's text message thread with Yvonne and were able to compare Yvonne's text message thread to Yvonne's, and they match up. If we go back and pay attention to the thread, it seems very immediate that Yvonne realizes that Daybani is too intoxicated. Right away, Yvonne is reaching out to Yvonne to come get her friend, asking her to help him in this situation. Because now he feels stuck and responsible for this young girl who is extremely intoxicated, and he's failing to be able to get help from her friends. Something important to point out here too is Yvonne tells Yvonne at the end of their conversation that this is where Daybani is, saying, "I can't get her, and you all need to come get her." This point can say Yvonne should have called an officer and gotten help, but again, we're not familiar with this area and their relationship with their police department. In America, there are some people that don't see the police as helpers. They fear that if they call them for help, they're only going to make a situation worse. So this might have been one of those situations. Again, I'm not familiar with this area, so I can't say if that's the reason why. Something important here to point out is when police are going through their text messages between Yvonne and Juan, they see that Yvonne sent Juan Debani's home address, but that it wasn't the correct address. Had Juan driven her to this address, it wouldn't have been home. Investigators start questioning Debani's friends and those that were attending the party with her and focusing on those at the last party she was with before Juan picked her up. Her friends from that night say it was the last party that Debani just started to get out of hand. She was extremely intoxicated and was becoming increasingly aggressive. It would be Debani's friends and other partygoers that would explain to investigators that the guy in their surveillance footage seen chasing after Debani was from the party. Debani at that point was already out of control and decided to run out on her own, and he was running after her, trying to calm her down and keep her from running off on her own. More partygoers and friends would explain that not only was this guy trying to keep her from running off and hurting herself, but when we all see them come up on Debani as they surround her, that their intention was to just try to keep her in one place so she wouldn't hurt herself, and that they were trying to get a bottle of vodka from her hands because she was clearly overly intoxicated and out of control at this point. Before we see Debani out with this group of people trying to calm her down in the footage, they said that she was already very intoxicated and had locked herself in the bathroom and had tried to jump into a pool and was acting very erratic. She was running around, getting in people's faces, putting her hands in their faces, cussing and insulting people while attempting to hit people. She was just really out of control. It would be once they were all outside as a group that they realized that Debani was only going to get worse. They said at this point they had no control of her and they weren't able to keep her safe. And that's when Yvonne would say, "I'm going to call Juan and get her a ride home because now there's no way we can control her in this situation." I think if she was that out of control, her friend should have gone with her to make sure she was able to actually get home, but that's not what happened. They watched her get into the backseat of Juan's car, and then one of the girls from the group, it's hard to tell which one, walks up to the driver door talking to Juan for a moment, and then Juan and Debani drive away. Investigators up to this point have collected surveillance footage from the location of where the party was, but now they have information from Juan saying where he dropped her off at. Now they can start looking for more possible surveillance footage in that area where she was dropped off. A few days into their investigation, they are now able to zero in on other surveillance footage in the area. Surveillance footage at 4:28 a.m. in the morning from a transport company shows Debani walking in the middle of that median lane on the highway. Juan took that last photo of Debani. In this video, we can see Debani begins to almost stumble off and on the median into traffic. And you can see that a car actually has to swerve around her to avoid hitting her as she stumbles into a lane. 4:30 a.m., Debani is actually pretty close to the camera as she stumbles out of the roadway into what almost looks like a parking lot, and she's looking around the buildings. It looks like she's trying to take in her surroundings, maybe looking for somebody to ask for help or directions. I can't really be sure, but she's looking around and nobody's following her that we can see. Also important to note is that, as far as we know, no cars are following her either as she exits the highway. She is completely on her own from what we can see. The company that the surveillance footage is from is in the same parking lot as some other businesses, almost like a shopping district or center. There's a hotel in the same shopping center named Nueva Castilla, and next to it sits an old restaurant that has not been in use for quite some time. The building is in the shape of a circle, which comes into play when we see security footage because of the angles that this restaurant can capture due to its circular shape. At 4:33 a.m., you can see Debani on the restaurant security footage exiting the highway. The security camera shows four large panel doors that are in a circular curve that face the garden and the pool. In this same footage, the top right corner, there is a door to the restaurant that is on the street facing the highway, the same highway that Debani comes off of, and we can see her through that glass door moving past the restaurant doors towards the hotel. Investigators believe that we say Debani crossed that glass door, and again they state that she is alone and that they don't believe they see anyone following her. At 4:35 a.m., we see Debani again alone running past the front lobby in the direction of the hotel rooms, and no one again is seen chasing her or behind her in that available footage. This property has a front lobby that is separate in the main parking lot, and then you would drive over or walk over to the building that houses the actual hotel rooms. And that's the direction Debani was running toward. At this point, Debani makes a complete circle, running now in the garden pool area where those curved large four-panel doors are in the restaurant, and we see her dart past, stopping to look in those doors. When you look closely at the footage, you can actually see Debani's arms in the shadows, looking like they're trying to open those doors, but they don't open. That's when Debani turns away from the doors and walks towards the back wall and stands in the corner off camera. Based on the angle of these three windows or doors that we are able to see her from, she stands in this perfect corner that you can't see her on camera, but you know she didn't go left or right because you would catch her through the window or the door. That's at 4:37 a.m., and she stays in that corner off camera for 24 minutes. We don't catch her going backwards, and we don't catch her going towards the highway past the other two windows. Investigators say in that 24 minutes, they don't see anyone cross those windows either, except for traffic passing on the highway. Now, that corner she's in of the garden wall, on the other side of that wall is a highway. I don't know if they have footage on that exact side of that wall or if the first footage we see of her walking on the highway is in front of that building. It's not 100% clear for me. But we do have footage from inside the restaurant, and we see at least very clearly on the large windows and doors that nobody's moving towards her and she's not moving either. There is a slim window in the upper corner, and there is some debate on movement at that door in the upper right-hand corner. Some people do believe they saw someone cross that door, but we do for sure not see them in the garden footage from those doors. At 4:56 a.m., 24 minutes later, you will see Debani walk from the corner past those four large windows along the back garden wall. We see her step behind these very low bushes that might come up to a little below her knees, and we see her walk against the wall between the wall and those baby bushes, and she disappears off camera. And that's the last footage investigators had and that the public sees. This footage would be discovered 2 weeks into the investigation, and a lot of people have questions why it was 2 weeks into the investigation and what took so long for them to find this footage. Along this wall that we say Debani last walking, if you keep walking along that wall, you will come in contact with these large square holes in the ground. They are underwater storage systems called cisterns. It's a system that collects rainwater to be used for washing and cleaning. It would be April 21st when workers at the hotel would report to the police that they had a foul-smelling odor coming from their garden area. That would be the call that would lead investigators to this footage at the restaurant and motel of Debani the last night she was seen. When investigators got to the garden and got closer to the cisterns, that's when they would discover that the foul odor was coming from there. An important thing to know here is that the cisterns were located about 30 feet from where we see Debani last on camera. They are three large squares that are almost flat with the ground, a little raised up, but pretty close to flat with the ground. One of them has a lid on it, and the other two were uncovered. That's typical when they're collecting rainwater. They don't have a lid on them, but this restaurant has been out of commission for quite some time. So this has just been sitting the way it was last used. Cisterns are typically 14 feet deep, made of cement, top to bottom, and the openings are around 2 by 3 square feet. The two open cisterns had about 3 feet of water in them at the time that investigators were there. At about 7 or 8 feet in this 14-foot tube, there is a part where the two cisterns connect, and it's about a 9-inch opening that connects these two tanks together so that the water can flow back and forth between the two of them. This is where investigators would make the unfortunate discovery of Debani's remains. Decomposition at this point, Debani was identified by her crucifix necklace that she always wore and the clothing that matched the description that she was wearing the night she vanished. In that gap that connected the two cisterns together is where they would find Debani's phone, makeup bag, and a few other personal items. It would be determined through autopsy that Debani's remains had been in that cistern for approximately 13 days. Debani's family had done an amazing job of keeping her in the news while she was missing. Her father is a lawyer, and he knew to keep her face in the news, so when it was released that investigators had discovered DeBonnie's remains at this hotel, mass protests across the state broke out demanding justice for DeBonnie and the women of Mexico that continue to be killed and go missing every single day. Hundreds of women would block the highway in downtown Monterey demanding an end to femicide in their country. They say as women, they were in danger day after day and nobody doing anything to stop it. Protesters were also demanding the resignation of the state secretary of security. That haunting last photo of DeBonnie standing in the highway median, arms crossed, staring out into the night, that picture became the face of a movement. As the days went on, these protests spread all across Mexico with thousands of women demanding justice for DeBonnie and all the women that continue to go vanish and being killed in their country. They are demanding for femicide to be recognized as a hate crime. Because of how profile DeBonnie's case was, her autopsy was performed and completed by the very next day after they discovered her remains on April 22nd. That autopsy would state that DeBonnie had suffered a blow to the front of her head, which caused deep contusions. The findings stated that there were injuries at the base of her skull. The autopsy also found that there was no water in her lungs and that she had been alive when she entered the cistern. They estimated her time of death between 5 days and 2 weeks. Examiner said that the way that DeBonnie's body went into the cistern, she would have been able to stand up, but she had suffered a traumatic brain injury. DeBonnie's death was officially ruled an accident by the coroner and investigators. DeBonnie's family would hold her funeral on April 23rd, and the women of Mexico marched down the street once again, especially in Monterey, on that same highway in her honor as her family laid her to rest. At DeBonnie's funeral, her family would make it clear when her father gave a speech to the crowd, to the public, to everyone, letting them know that they believe that their daughter was murdered and that this was no accident. Not only were the protesters and those in the community, along with friends and family, not able to accept that DeBonnie's death was an accident, something about all of it made them feel it was so much more. Was it a horrible accident? That's not what many believed, and neither did so many press organizations from across the globe. Vice World News would even cover DeBonnie's story, and they were convinced, along with many other locals, that this wasn't an accident, that something more had happened that night that DeBonnie disappeared. Now you know me, I don't speculate, I try to go off reported facts. And it's important that we talk about these headlines because it wasn't just some conspiracy or some sensationalization of this story when it comes to DeBonnie's case. There was such a strong feeling in Mexico and Monterey from their own people and their family that there was something bigger going on here. And it was something that news from all across the world couldn't ignore either. And to be honest, they might have been on the right path because DeBonnie's family did not accept the first autopsy report. They felt it was rushed, they felt it was done by a source they couldn't trust, and they wanted an outside independent autopsy performed. And that's exactly what they did, and the results of that autopsy paint a very different picture. So then I'm going to come back and talk about why these papers globally picked up DeBonnie's story and saying that there was something else going on here is because they were out in these communities and they were hearing the people of Monterey saying, there's more going on with this case. It was becoming clear that this community didn't have trust in their investigators because so many women were continuing to vanish and be murdered, and it seems like nothing was being done to help any of them. April 26, 3 days after DeBonnie's service, her family is brought into the police station and shown new video footage from Nueva Castella, the motel next to the abandoned restaurant. Footage that investigators and the family were told didn't exist by the owners of the hotel. They were initially told that the motel's security cameras only recorded in real time and that they didn't have the capability of storing any footage. However, just days later, DeBonnie's family is brought into the prosecutor's office and they are sat down and the family is shown 3 videos taken from the cameras that night showing DeBonnie entering the motel alone and walking alone around the inside of the building. And Mario would be asked after his meeting with the prosecution office what he had seen in the footage. Mario said that DeBonnie is seen twice in the footage and says, quote, "That's all I can say because that's all is seen and I can't tell lies," end quote. Another thing that feels off for a lot of locals about where DeBonnie was found was that these cisterns were actually not very easy to access. They're in the back corner of the garden. You wouldn't be able to climb over the wall to get to them because there is barbed wire that hangs from the wall. And you would have to go in the hotel entrance, which is open 24 hours a day, to get into that area by the street. That's the only entrance into that area. This footage allegedly is from the camera that is facing the entrance of the motel, and you can see Daybani at 4:36 a.m. Paper Reforma did an interview with the deputy prosecutor Luis Enrico Ozorco, and he stated that the video footage does show Daybani walking alone through the restaurant and later in the pool area, and that she's alone and approaches the cistern. He says, quote, "In the last images we have, she is walking along the side of the fence next to where her remains are found," end quote. They don't go into whether they have footage of her entering the cisterns or not, and her father does not say. But they see her walking along the path to the cisterns by herself and again reiterate that she is not being followed by anyone. What bothers Daybani's families and locals was that this footage wasn't presented when they first came to investigate the garden. And this footage is now coming to light after they were told that the motel security cameras didn't store anything. So how did they get this footage, and why did it come later, and why were they hesitant to release it to the public like they did with all the other footage? Mario Daybani's father at this point still wants Juan David to continue to be investigated because he states there is footage from inside the car that allegedly shows Juan reaching out to touch Daybani's breast, and that her father and family believe that's why she got out of the car on Monterey Nuevo Laredo Highway at 4:30 a.m., which is where her cell phone last pinged. Prosecutor Gustavo Alfredo Guerrero says that they questioned Juan many times and he's been cooperative each time. Guerrero says that Juan's car was also searched and there was no evidence to collect. Prosecutors also say they have additional security footage from Alacosta Transport showing Daybani at the entrance of the motel trying to ask an employee for help, quote, "without success," end quote. They do not elaborate as to what else the footage shows and what they meant by "she tried to get help from an employee without success." Does that mean at some point she had a possible interaction with hotel staff? On the 27th of April, not only was the family and community questioning why this footage just became available, but they were losing more trust with investigators, and Daybani's case would be passed over to a specialized femicide prosecution unit. The femicide unit will review what investigators have already collected on the case and analyze their findings so far. I want to stop here and just say that I urge listeners to go study the history of femicide in Mexico and the current crisis, not just for women in northeastern Mexico. Some quick statistics for you that will have increased by the time I record this. In the state of Nuevo León, 41 women have disappeared from the surrounding suburbs of Monterey since the very beginning of 2022. And based off an official figure, more than 1,700 women have been reported missing across the entire state. These disappearances have been of young women, almost all under the age of 30. Daybani's story is just one of the many young women whose lives are being stolen every day, and they need help. They need us to be talking about it and bringing our media attention to these missing and murdered women, too. May 13th, Daybani's family would get back the report of the independent autopsy they had requested. Once completed, it was handed over to authorities as well. Second independent forensic report stated that Daybani's remains showed signs of sexual abuse, and this was not noted in their first report done by officials. This report also contradicts the second report saying that Daybani died before her body ended up in the water tank. The second report also noted more injuries than the first report. Quote, "lacious ecchymosis on both sides of the frontal region of the skull, on the right and left eyelid, on the side of the nose, on both lips, above the right ear and the right rectal region," unquote. Sorry if I butchered any of those words. The manner of death noted in the report states, quote, "the cranial facial contusions are of external origin to the body, and because they are intense, repeated, and with different angles of impact, it follows that they were caused by another person and that it was a violent homicidal death," unquote. The report goes on to say that the blows must have been delivered with a, quote, "blunt mechanical agent," unquote. The second autopsy report also ruled out strangulation and suffocation as a cause of death. Investigators now have a second independent autopsy to examine and compare to the first one, but as of yet, they have not released a full second report or really let the public know in which direction they plan to continue to take DeBonnie's case. Three, an investigation into DeBonnie's case, Nuevo León Prosecutor's Office has dismissed two prosecutors. In the case review, it was discovered that the motel was actually searched up to four times before DeBonnie's remains were found. Due to ongoing protests, it was apparent that the community wanted someone held responsible for the fact that it took them days after the discovery of her remain to get additional security camera footage from the motel. Since I actually started writing this and researching this episode, there has been an update. As of July 18th, they did do a third autopsy, and the results were just released 3 days ago, stating that DeBonnie was indeed suffocated somehow. They're still working on getting the full availability to release that report, and the people of Mexico and Monterrey are demanding that. So many things have been unacceptable in this investigation. And while the department has an increasingly high number of women disappearing in their area, it is still unacceptable to make mistakes this big that have this massive of an impact on how a case is solved. We are still waiting for an official report from that third autopsy, and I will link any articles that come out as I'm recording this to the episode, of course, so that we can follow up with that third autopsy. To this day, while countless TV shows in Mexico and around the world have become obsessed with DeBonnie's story, it's not always in a good way. Some are spending their time interviewing the cab driver Juan over and over, as well as the two friends that put her in that car that night alone and sent her home alone. In some cases, DeBonnie's case has turned into a media circus on social media, but unfortunately, it's not always based around DeBonnie getting justice. Instead, it's been focused on talking to her friends that were with her that night, who left her alone in that situation, and people making up conspiracies about everything and anything from what happened to her that night as to what she had in her purse and who she interacted with. She could have been running from party to party being chased by that person with bad intentions, and maybe partygoers and her friends are all making up stories and having each other's back. Or maybe it really happened the way they said it did. Maybe she was running from violence at the party and that's why her second autopsy shows such violence. Maybe she crossed paths with someone who wanted to harm her after fleeing the cab. We don't have enough information to say one way or another. Maybe this is a tragic accident. I don't have those answers. I'd like to know what you all think. Please share DeBonnie's story. Her family and community desperately needs answers. And please, if you have time to look into Mexico's femicide rate and learn more about it, please do. Thank you for tuning in today, and don't forget to leave a review, subscribe, hit that like button on whatever platform you're tuning in on, as well as this will help others find these cases. As always, I will drop the links in my show notes as well as the pictures and photos of DeBonnie's case on my website. I will also post a list of sources and informative links for you to take a deeper dive into this case because there's so much more to this story. And to the women's stories in Mexico, and they need a voice. Don't forget when you see those missing and murdered posts on social media to hit like, share, and retweet. Every time we share a face, we get closer to solving a case. Until next time.